You are listening to TLRStation.com.
Welcome to Self Connection Showcase. Today we have a very special guest interview for you hosted by Michael Finch, owner of Self Connection Books. Self Connections is an education center focused on personal growth, health, and spirituality. Michael is excited to showcase these authors and subject matter experts in this new format. And now, here's your host, Michael Finch.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael at Self Connection, sitting again with Michelle and Catherine, who are the owners and founders of a company in Calgary called The Alignment Project. The company focuses on life skills, on stresses, and being more in balance as a result of them coming out of the corporate world and what they've experienced. Today, I want to focus, ladies, on a phenomenon we parents, mothers coming into the store with children aged five, and as young as five, saying they have serious anxiety problems, which I find absolutely horrifying, because when I think back to when I was five, my God, I didn't have a care in the world. My mother would lock me out of the house every day and say, go play. Yeah. I mean, literally. Yeah. And so these kids today, when you start to look at what we're doing, which is a world of protection and sport, all organized, where they're taught win at all costs. We're not teaching the life skills and team building. We're teaching get out there and win and putting pressures on these kids. And of course, they watch our lifestyle and see how we're behaving and not coming home and connected. We're still in a world where we're still connected to our jobs, etc. And I'm going to just add to that some things that Greg Braden, who is a big heart math, you two do a lot of work in heart math, and he says that in the early days of our society, we lived in a world of cooperation, not competition, and that nature, through its own nature, is more cooperation rather than competition. So here we are today, encouraging competition and all those things. So my questions for you are, what are your comments on that? Good thing that we're putting these kids into all these things, and if not, what do we do about this?
Wow. So that is a lot of really powerful stuff. The first thing I heard you say was, in your growing up, that you were, you know, tossed out the door and don't come back till dinner kind of thing.
That's exactly
and go play.
Right.
Well, mine was a very similar experience. Nobody worried about me because, you know, I was out in the world on my bike with my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and it was all good.
And you were going to show up at dinner time again.
That's exactly right. Conversation at the barbecue dinner table just last night with my parents. And one of the things that I have observed in raising my children, who are teenagers now, is that we are in a very fear-based society, okay? And I think a lot of the fear base has come from the instantaneous opportunity that technology, right? Technology is instantaneous. So now we're all fearful because we hear a lot of things that are happening all over the place. The media is not going to tell us good news stories. And so we start to drink from this fountain that says you need to be fearful because someone's going to go out there and get your kids. Mm-hmm. You can't even let them go to the playground because someone's going to drive down the street and snatch them off. Mm-hmm. So what I noticed about that was I, as a parent parenting my children, can either buy into the fear base, or I can say, where's the balance between allowing my children to have a level of independence, grow their own ability in the world to feel confident that they've got the skills that they need to be able to make good decisions on the way responsible and keep them safe. But by the same token, I want them to be able to explore their world and learn very valuable life skills along the way. So I'm going to just sort of park that over there because I think it brings up the next piece, which says we have put kids into organized sport because we're too afraid to let them go on their bike for the rest of the day. So now we have to organize everything. We organize and book the play dates. We organize and book them into sports. So we always know where they are at all times. And it's belief that for some people is that competition is and winning at all costs is what makes us feel better about ourselves. And we're going to do it without regard for anyone else out there. And so we have become adversarial as opposed to cooperative as opposed to collaborative, mm-hmm. which is a place that is a lot, I think we get a greater expression of ourselves mm-hmm. when we're in a place of courage, cooperation, and creativity. We are better together. Out. Mm-hmm. So that can address a corporation going for market share and winning,
yeah.
right? But what is the piece that is at all costs? I'm talking a lot. Why don't you, do you want to add into that?
Yeah, no, I love what you're saying. You know, I think when I think about this competitiveness versus cooperativeness, I agree with you. I mean, intrinsically, we are born to support one another,
mm-hmm.
and we're born to share our gifts, and those are very unique gifts. So we do not need to focus so heavily on competitiveness. But what has happened, to this point, fear does not breed abundance.
Mm-hmm.
It breeds scarcity. So when you look at competitiveness, there's a confusion about best and winning.
Yes.
So we're driven to be our best, and that's healthy. And that can happen on a team or individual sports. That's all good. But if we're driven to win, mm-hmm. what's the difference in the energetics? If you think about playing to win and be happy and content, or are you playing to not fail?
Mm-hmm.
What's the energy difference?
Yeah.
That doesn't breed collaboration or cooperation. It breeds separate. And it is happening in the corporate worlds. It's happening on the playing fields, and it's happening in the corporate worlds.
Mm-hmm. Well, and look at the world's wealth and the distribution of wealth.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the world's wealth is held by 1% of the population. I think it comes to this whole idea of competitiveness.
Yeah.
You know, if I have the most toys at the end of the game, I win. Well, yeah, and what was the cost to having the most toys at the end of the game?
Yeah.
You know, the rest of the planet went hungry and starved to death, and they didn't have clean water, and we didn't care. We didn't care about the people, and we didn't care about the planet because we wanted to have the most and win. So winning and having the market share and driving shareholder values, if they are kept in balance with taking care of people. And taking care of and caring about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the big piece that's missing.
Yeah.
Because when we take care of and we care about, we're going to find ways to be collaborative with our competitors to do the right things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a shift.
Oh, yeah.
There's a shift that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're starting to see, I think, with some of the younger generations now, though, too, is an inherent knowing that caring about other people is important, and it helps us be healthy and well, right? It's the ideal state,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? I have to be willing to give and to receive
mm-hmm.
in order for us to all feel good and be able to ascend, if you will,
mm-hmm.
the self-actualization path.
Yeah.
In fact, there are lots of teachers today and books we have today that talk about corporations who have an attitude of giving,
mm-hmm.
an attitude of community,
yes.
will get better. If it's all about eking out every penny, the last dollar for my shareholders, and if that's the only focus,
mm-hmm.
then as you said, Michelle, it becomes a fear thing. We're working hard not to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the corporate world today. Yes, some of those paradigms are starting to come undone, but there's still these massive organizations that are just wanting to be bigger and bigger and bigger. And you have to ask the question, when is it enough?
Yeah.
When?
Yeah.
But there doesn't seem to be an answer to that because it's self-fulfilling. It just, it's never enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And other studies show that, you know, people who don't have money
mm-hmm.
are fearful that they're never going to have money.
Mm-hmm.
People who have a lot of money are fearful that they're not going to be able to keep it.
Yes, it's mm-hmm. true.
And so that fear is always revolving around mm-hmm. that. And that energy that you talked about, Michelle, is so true.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings the whole thing back to the heart.
Yes.
If you're in that mode of feeling grateful for what you have, giving yourself for things that maybe you haven't done enough of or well enough, boy, that whole energy changes and then your life flows more.
Yes.
And we need to teach that to our kids.
Yes. But, well, and when you talked about, you know, people coming into the store with children at age 5 with anxiety, I mean, where did it come from?
Absolutely.
Well, we taught them.
We taught them
how to be anxious.
Absolutely.
Because as we've spoken, if we're asleep and we're on autopilot and we're doing it at all costs, we are in a state that really shuts down access to our greatest capabilities, our, you know, optimal performance, our best selves. You could call it whatever it is, but we have become stuck in a perpetual cycle of not enough. And when you talk about the energetics that go in the field, I mean, science says very clearly that we can measure from the heart. Oh, field. Yeah. Thank you. The electromagnetic field. Mm-hmm. And we are all touching each other's field at all times. And so we know what it feels like to be with people who are gracious and have grace and are practice gratitude and care and have compassion. That is a felt sense and it brings us closer together. But when that is not present, it creates all kinds of havoc in our homes, in our workplaces, in our relationships. It's a recipe for disaster or high dysfunction in any case.
Yeah. As I listen to it, you know, anxiety is really just a confusion within, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at children, we need to, instead of just, you know, engulfing them with all of our assumptions and our crazy beliefs, we need to learn from them. Because instead of telling or teaching our children to shield their hearts, we need to get them to share their hearts. Mm. Don't we?
But isn't that their natural state?
Completely, which is why they go into anxiety, because we confuse them, and the body confused is anxious.
Yeah. We're teaching them something which is not natural to them, and they're internally feeling resistance to that.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Mom is telling me that I'm supposed to behave this way. I love Mom. I trust Mom. But my intrinsic being is saying, no, I'm supposed to share.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to love.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Isn't it funny? We come to this planet with absolutely everything we need, and we are perfect when we arrive here, and then we do spend our whole lives, I think, trying to get back in with. Because it gets engineered out of us.
I've always considered that a real paradox, Catherine, that it seems like we spend our whole lives learning, endeavoring, trying to be happy.
Yes.
I mean, it's what our pursuit is, and yet we come into this world perfectly well.
We do. We do. So it becomes this lifelong journey, and I think, wow, how can we be the responsible beings to, first of all, get awake, wake up as adults, wake up to where we're not connected to ourselves, come to know ourselves, at a level that we've never looked at before, because, you know, we've been too busy to actually do that. Mm-hmm. And Michelle and I talk about the fact that busyness is just a great cover-up, isn't it? And it's a great place where you don't have to really look at what's going on. You don't really have to feel what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you can live in this sort of pseudo-fake place where it's not real at all. It's all made up. So, you know, we spend our whole lives trying to come back home to ourselves, don't we?
So, Michelle, this whole thing of competition, jumped on that when I first brought up that topic. Why are you so sensitive to that?
Oh, you know what? I think that I probably journeyed that competition piece myself. I take on it is that when you try too hard, you fall really hard, right? And, you know, if you're too competitive, it's really not fun. Right? It's not. It's way more fun. Like Catherine said, I mean, we go farther together. We have more fun together. Mm-hmm. And intrinsically, we're supposed to do life together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But I think, too, you know, sport is a wonderful parallel to life.
Yeah.
So I love the lessons that that I learned in sport. Mm-hmm. Because skills are to be able to be the best version of myself that I could be. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean being, you know, winning gold on the podium every time.
What is it then?
It is about how do I feel when I learn how to cooperate and cohabitate. You know, I've got lifelong friendships from competitive sport from 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's the connection that was made because we shared common goal. We supported each other. We championed each other. You know, we hugged each other. We learned what it was like to fail, which wasn't a failure at all. It was a wonderful new opportunity to regroup and know that you are absolutely good enough no matter where you are. There's not a single in sport that judges, right? Where is your center? What is your internal measure of success? It's about having clear connection to what is that for me inside? Because the whole world is outside there to judge us. Mm-hmm. And we can buy into that judgment or not. Mm-hmm. You know, we can use it to inform, but it can, if we let it define us.
And we usually do.
And we do. That's where we get into trouble. And that's why it's so great for us to start to learn.
Yeah.
I think if all of the sports organizations mm-hmm. and coaches were to teach those skills that you just identified, mm-hmm. that it is about being a team and cooperating and coming together for a common goal, mm-hmm. and that winning isn't any more important. It's also learning how to lose because yes. that's life, yes. and learning that we are good enough mm-hmm. and building those mm-hmm. self-esteem things. And what we see when these parents come in with kids with anxiety,
yeah.
there's huge esteem values there. The
yeah.
kids don't feel like they're measuring up to their yeah. parents' expectations or society's expectations.
Well, guess what? And that carries on through our whole adult lives.
Absolutely.
As well, until we recognize it. In fact, in our coaching work, mm-hmm. we do a lot of work around emotional intelligence, right? And that's about being really aware of how we feel about ourselves mm-hmm. with our strengths and our warts and all, and to know that we are good enough. So that little voice that comes up in the head that says exactly those things, yeah. you're not enough, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, you're overweight, you're not wearing the right clothes. You know, there's all of, oh, you need to be perfect. Or, you know, those yeah. things that we learned as we were growing up, are they a fault of our parents? Because that was the best that they knew at that time.
Well, and their mentality was, it's got to be survival of the fittest.
Yes.
Based on the generations. And my parents came out of the Depression.
Yes.
And so it was struggles and mm. every man for himself kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
And so, sure, every parent, when you mm. ask them what they want... Mm. They want the best for their children.
Yes.
But their definition of that is wealth,
yes.
fame,
yes.
be an NHL player,
yes.
be the CEO of a corporation.
Yes.
I want my kid to be really genuinely happy with who he is.
Bingo.
You don't yeah. hear parents say that.
No, because is that a measure of success?
It's not a measure of success.
Well, and you know, let's take this to the corporate world, too. We know that organizations that can create a culture where it's okay to say, I have a problem and I don't know how to solve it, mm-hmm. are so successful. They're way more productive, the relationships are healthier, and they're doing big things in the world. It's yes. things that they haven't figured
yes.
out
yes.
that are being held back and stressed out.
And the culture becomes, not my fault.
Not yeah. my fault.
I didn't do that.
No.
Don't blame me.
No.
And no one
takes accountability for anything.
Yeah.
But it comes back to the idea of fear. So we come back to the fear-based place, and yeah. it also is connected back to the feelings place.
Yeah.
How we feel in the presence of each other.
Yes.
Are we supported? Are we championed? Are we okay saying, oh, geez, I got that wrong?
Yeah.
Or, oh, boy, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the organizations that can say that's okay and let's figure out a pathway
yeah.
are the ones.
So in your work,
mm-hmm.
in your corporate world work,
mm-hmm.
are you seeing evidence of that? Are you seeing corporations with that philosophy, that culture, which has to come from the top?
Yeah.
It has to be the CEOs and the presidents that instill that culture down.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that or are you
yeah.
not seeing that?
Yeah. Well, can I just say,
you
know, leadership is It's an inside-out job. Mm-hmm. And if the leader has awareness and the leader has the ability to understand their impact, you know, because organizations are made up of people, mm-hmm. and people are feeling creatures. So you can park logic because we have to deal with the emotional piece first. Again, it comes back to the triggers of what's happening in the environment. If a senior leader is feeling stress of the environment, is not aware of it, and then reacts in the environment, what they effectively are doing is shutting down the entire organization because people become disengaged. They don't feel good. They're not bringing the effort to the team that is nurturing me. This is an environment that feels icky, and I actually want to get and avoid it. As much as possible. So let me ask you then, what kind of discretionary effort would any individual bring into an environment that felt toxic or didn't feel good?
Sure.
And that is from the top down,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, what can we do about that is we can feel compassion for the leader, yeah. right? And understand that they're up against a lot of things. But being up against a lot of stuff does not give us permission to behave badly. Hmm. And there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah. So Mike is... organizations are changing their scorecard.
Mm. Right? We do see that.
We do see it. We do. And there's a human component. Thank goodness yes. that there's a human component that's coming into it. So, you know, the questions are changing. Mm-hmm. And organizations are being more willing to confront and be responsible for their piece. But it's also a two-way street. The employees have to stand up also. The employees have to stand up and speak up. Right? I would say, you know, it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
Well, as I gather from that, it's a cultural thing. We're not accustomed to doing that. Mm-hmm. And perhaps just listening to the CEO say those things, mm-hmm. you're still in the back of your mind going, yeah, not sure I completely believe that. You need mm-hmm. to see the actions yes. supporting the words. Yeah. That guy at the top has to show that he's culpable, he makes mistakes, and he yes. can admit when he makes mistakes.
Beautiful piece of the willingness to be vulnerable.
Yes, that right? vulnerability.
The foundational place for where trust is built. Uh-huh. And you know, you know what it feels like when someone is telling you the truth, mm-hmm. right? The words that they say, their whole presence with you. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to that electromagnetic field yes. of the heart. We need to be really aware of the relational energetics that we bring. Because people will get a sense right away whether you are telling the truth right from a fake place or from a real place. Yeah. Yeah. You know, oh, this is what I should say, but I don't really think it's the right thing to say. People know that right away.
Well, and in the world is... I mean, you know what? We've experienced a lot of things, right? We're pretty scared for our own safety these days.
Yes.
There's lots of
yes.
things that are going on in the world. And so to your point, Catherine, around trust, I mean, the erosion of trust in the world today mm-hmm. has caused a lot of skepticism in
yes.
individuals, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
So even more than ever, I agree with you so much. Mm-hmm. We really need to focus on who we bring to our communication.
Yes.
Particularly in the world today of internet.
Yes.
Because as we talk, we're overwhelmed with information, but we're exposed to so many things that we would not have known about before, mm-hmm. which is drama, fear-based, mm-hmm. all those things. And so, yes, that whole safety thing mm-hmm. is a big thing for us. We,
yes.
we look at what's going on in other parts of the world and look at what the media has done to us recently. Oh,
yes.
price of oil is in the basement,
yes.
and this is doom and gloom. We're all
yes.
going to die.
Yes.
I mean, just look at what we're exposed to everywhere we go.
Yeah, it's Armageddon, it's meltdowns.
And the internet is a big, mm-hmm. you know, deliverer mm-hmm. of that.
Yeah. But you know, it comes back, I think, too, to what you said, Michelle, is we get to choose what we're going to subscribe to or not.
Yes.
And when we are connected to ourselves, and we have trust with ourselves, and we practice skills and ways of being. And this isn't to say Pollyanna. We're not being Pollyanna. But I'll tell you what. If I sit down in the morning and I do a little bit of heart-focused, a place that is, what am I grateful for in the midst of difficult times? You know, we are always, right? If I get grounded in that and say, you know, I do own a home and I have healthy children and I have the opportunity to work in ways that are rewarding and I live in a country that's pretty darn safe and here are the things that I choose to focus in on, that becomes a wellspring that I can bring out into the world as opposed to contributing to the conversation from the doom and gloom place. You know, the sky is falling. I mean, we to the conversation.
Yes.
What we bring to the field environment, if you will, because we're all connected.
It's so true.
Whether we know it or not, we're all connected.
So this brings us to the end of our time today. Mm-hmm. Michelle, Catherine, that was a fabulous conversation. And for the listeners, none of this was rehearsed. None of this was planned. This was just a free flow conversation that we felt like doing.
Yeah.
And if you are interested in learning more about what the girls are talking about, of emotions and being, understanding who we are, I highly encourage you to check their work out at thealignmentproject.ca and understand more about what they do and how they can help you and the techniques that they have for achieving those things. It's not just reading about it. There are techniques that they can teach you to get you there. Mm. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. What a great day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Self Connection Showcase here on TLRStation.com, powered by Tenacious Living International. To contact Michael Finch, visit www.selfconnection.ca. Join us next week, same time and place, for the next episode of Self Connection Showcase. Have a great day.